Hey there. You know, we have a new president here in the U.S., and as things transition, the NPR Politics Podcast is the place to go. They'll have two new podcast episodes each week, so you'll know what happened and what it means by the time you get to work or class or whatever your morning routine is. Make the NPR Politics Podcast a part of it as you follow the first 100 days and beyond. Subscribe or listen on the NPR One app or at npr.org/podcasts. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. This week, we're going to introduce you to another NPR podcast. It's NPR's first Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante. Joining us from the studios of the Columbia University Journalism School is the host and co-founder of Radio Ambulante, Daniel Alarcón. Daniel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Felix.
Okay, so this week there's not going to be a lot of music here on Alt Latino. What we're going to do is hear some clips from the show, but also talk mostly about the program and what it's about. So, Daniel, give us your elevator pitch. What is Radio Ambulante?
Put me on the spot right away, huh? The idea of Radio Ambulante, I think we wanted to tell stories from Latin America, stories from everywhere Spanish is spoken, and we wanted to take the style of some of these great narrative journalism shows that you hear on public radio and use that aesthetic to report on Latin America. When we think about Latin America, we think of the United States as a Latin American country, in part because, you know, if there's 35, 40 million Spanish speakers here in the States, that's a lot. That's a lot of folks. That's more people than in the country where I was born, in Peru. And one of the things that we keep in mind and sort of always have front and center when we produce our shows and when we talk about the kinds of stories we want to tell is that we think that linguistic and cultural boundaries and linguistic and cultural borders are fluid. Even when political borders might not be, there's just no denying the connections between the U.S. and Latin America. And we thought Spanish was the perfect language to tell those stories that are going to be, you know, crossing borders anyway.
You know, one of the things I like about your show is the fact that you let the people tell the stories themselves. There are some segments that are narrated or there's a producer who's kind of guiding us along. But as you touch on each theme or topic, we hear from the people who are affected or who are actually doing the work or involved in the story themselves. And I think that you'll hear that in this first segment that we're going to do in a piece that you called Deuda, and it's about the Puerto Rican debt crisis. And we're going to play a clip from the show. So, Daniel, can you give us a quick synopsis of what it is that we're going to hear in this clip?
This story, I begin in this clip by sort of warning the listener that it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of numbers in this piece. There's going to be a lot of facts and figures and you know, economic concepts. And I warn them that they might feel they're getting lost, but they should always keep in mind that these numbers have real consequences. And to illustrate that, we transition to my producer, Luis Treyes, who's Puerto Rican, who lives in San Juan, who's going to tell the story. And he's in front of a school in a working class part of San Juan, a school that's been closed due to budget cuts. And the reason we decided to do this was simply to ground a story that's about big concepts and economics and numbers. And really ground that in real life and real consequences and real people.
Bienvenidos a Radio Ambulante desde NPR. Soy Daniel Alarcón. Y antes de comenzar, quiero advertirles, en este episodio de Radio Ambulante hay muchos números, muchas cifras, términos y conceptos complicados que realmente aquí dentro del equipo editorial nos costó un poco de trabajo descifrar. Y precisamente por eso, porque hoy vamos a hablar de detalles de la economía que pueden parecer un tanto esotéricos, lejanos, abstractos, precisamente por eso quiero comenzar aquí, con una escena sencilla. Frente al portón de una escuela pública del pueblo de Manatí, en la costa norte de Puerto Rico.
¿Aquí era donde tú estudiabas?
Ajá.
Con Iromi, una niña de 7 años.
¿En qué grado tú estudiabas aquí?
Kindle.
¿Y la extrañas?
Sí.
Nuestro productor Luis Treyes acompañó a Iromi a la escuela primaria donde solía estudiar. Hoy en día la escuela está completamente abandonada. Paredes descascaradas, los arbustos casi tan altos como Iromi misma. Es difícil imaginar que hasta hace poco este lugar estuvo lleno de niños.
A veces, ¿verdad? La vecina que está al frente la limpian.
Esta es Tania Ginés, la mamá de Iromi.
Entre los vecinos pues la limpian, recortan la grama. y le dan un poquito de mantenimiento porque se ve bien fea. Las puertas abiertas, todos los baños abiertos.
La escuela José Meléndez Ayala se encuentra en Boquillas, un barrio rural del pueblo. En mayo del 2014, el Departamento de Educación del gobierno de Puerto Rico la mandó a cerrar, y para muchos vecinos el cierre fue un golpe durísimo, porque de muchas maneras la escuela era el centro de esta comunidad.
Ahí tú llegabas, todo el mundo se conocía, todos los niños eran de la comunidad. Esta escuela lleva 91 años donde está. Yo estudié ahí, mis hermanos estudiamos ahí. Yo crecí viendo a mis padres, ¿verdad?, dando su labor voluntaria sábado, domingo, limpiando escuela, arreglando.
En Boquillas, la gran mayoría de los estudiantes viven bajo el nivel de pobreza. La propia Tania está desempleada y tiene dos hijos mayores que también estudiaron en esa misma escuela. Y eso no es lo peor del caso, porque cuando uno vive en un lugar como Boquillas, escenas como esta pueden ser demasiado frecuentes.
Hace poco, aquí mismo, a las 3 de la tarde, cerraron toda la calle y estuvimos hasta las 8 de la noche sin poder entrar a nuestras casas. Se formó un tiroteo, heridos y todo, y entonces cerraron toda la carretera, todo este trayecto.
¿Pero tú crees que vinculado a tráfico de drogas?
Sí, entiendo que sí. Sí.
Por eso la escuela era un lugar tan importante. Era el sitio donde los chicos podían sentirse seguros y donde quizás podrían encontrar una alternativa para el futuro. Pero estos espacios, escuelas como esta, alrededor de Puerto Rico están desapareciendo. El gobierno ha cerrado más de 100 escuelas en los últimos 2 años. Y para entender por qué, primero hay que escuchar esto.
La deuda pública, considerando el nivel de actividad económica actual, es impagable.
Okay, that was a segment from Radio Ambulante as they cover the Puerto Rican debt crisis. I'm always surprised that people forget or don't even know that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. That's how little is known about what's going on there in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and Puerto Rico suffers from a certain kind of invisibility, a kind of double invisibility, because in the United States, it's considered part of Latin America and therefore neglected. And Latin America is considered part of the U.S., and so it's sort of isn't part of the regional conversation at times.
Danielle, the next segment that you brought in was a very curious story because it involves the book 100 Years of Solitude, which, you know, people of a certain age, it was kind of required reading as we discovered Latin American literature. But your story is not about the book or about the world-renowned author Gabriel García Márquez. It's about the book itself and a very specific book. Why don't you tell us what this story is about?
Yeah, I love this story. This was like a big news item about a year and a half ago. The big book fair in Bogota, the Feria Internacional, they always invite. This is a thing that happens in book fairs in Latin America and Europe, where there's always an invited country, and the guest country where they highlight literature and culture from this country, and that year in Bogota, it was a year after Gabo had passed away. The invited country, quote unquote, was Macondo, which is, of course, is the made up country where most of his work takes place. So it was the first time a made up country had been the país invitado, the invited nation, right?
That's awesome.
And one of the exhibits they had there was a collection of first editions of Gabo's work. And what happened was a first edition, a signed first edition of 100 Years of Solitude, his most famous novel, was stolen. And that's basically where the story begins. My producer, Camila Segura, lives in Bogotá, and she takes the story from there.
Entonces, Camila, ¿cómo comienza todo esto?
Comienza con una llamada. De David Roa a Álvaro Castillo, dos libreros bogotanos.
Yo cogí el teléfono, llamé a Álvaro. Álvaro me contestó y me dijo, ¿qué hubo, David? Y yo le dije, oiga, Álvaro, se robaron sus 100 años de soledad.
¿Su qué?
Sus 100 años de soledad.
¿El libro?
Sí, pero no cualquier ejemplar. Una primera edición y además dedicada a Álvaro por García Márquez. Y cuando David le dijo esto, Álvaro...
Yo me quedé callado.
Por un minuto por ahí.
Un buen rato.
O yo lo sentí una hora.
Yo le dije, ahora no quiero hablar. Y colgué.
¿Esto cuándo fue?
Hace más de un año, en mayo del 2015. Y te explico un poco. David era el encargado de la librería Macondo, en la Feria del Libro de Bogotá. Y Álvaro, un coleccionista de libros usados. Ese año fue la primera vez que el país invitado era ficticio, Macondo. García Márquez había muerto un año antes, en abril del 2014, y esa feria fue en su honor. Y el libro de Álvaro estaba exhibido con otros de su colección privada, en una exposición que estaba dentro de la librería que manejaba David.
Bienvenidos a Radio Ambulante desde NPR. Soy Daniel Alarcón.
Y yo, Camila Segura. Y hoy te quiero contar la historia de ese libro, de ese robo y de lo que significó para todo el país.
Dale.
Ok, entonces, Álvaro compró este libro en el 2006. Se acuerda bien, fue en Uruguay.
Y en Montevideo me gusta mucho ir a una calle que se llama calle Tristán Narvaja, que es una calle llena de librerías de libros usados.
Entró a una librería chiquita y preguntó por la sección de literatura latinoamericana. El librero le señaló dónde estaba.
Y cuando yo volteé la cara y miré, vi la primera edición de Cielos de Soledad. Y yo no lo podía creer.
Como es coleccionista, Álvaro sabía perfectamente cómo se veía la primera edición. Cogió el libro y miró el precio. 180 pesos uruguayos, que en esa época eran como 7 dólares.
Y yo me decía a mí mismo, miércoles, ¿yo qué voy a hacer? Se van a dar cuenta que cuando pase este libro, que es la primera edición,
pensó,
voy a pedir rebaja.
¡No!
Entonces le dijo al librero
que si me podía hacer una atención. Y él me dijo, y bueno, te lo dejo en 6 dólares.
Sacó los 6 dólares y le pagó al librero. Pero antes de irse, pidió prestado al baño.
Entonces entré al baño, hice pipí, respiré, me saqué el sudor con el pañuelo.
Salió y el librero, antes de pasarle el libro,
se quedó mirándolo y me dijo, ¿vos habías visto esta tapa? Y yo le dije, no. Entonces lo eché en una bolsa y dije muchas gracias y me fui. Y no lo podía creer.
Okay, as a collector of vinyl records, I can certainly relate to to his joy and unexpected pleasure of finding a rare book that he bought for $7 in that bookstore in Uruguay.
Yeah, I mean that's the part. We actually got a really funny voice message from a listener the other day saying that, you know, he shouldn't have been upset that it was stolen because he basically stole it from the Uruguayan bookseller. And that's just, you know, what goes around comes around.
That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, basically. It was like, we're all thieves here. You know? So what I love about this story, Felix, is I write fiction. I read a lot of fiction. I think the reason why, to me, is because it's the contrast between this idea of Macondo, this kind of folkloric, idealized vision of kind of a rural Latin America, clashing with the urban, chaotic reality of Latin America. We know it's Macondo versus Bogota. It's the country versus the city. It's rural versus urban. You know, it's a clash of cultures even within a country. And I think it was that tension that really excited me as a listener and as a storyteller.
Okay, let's go back for a second because you mentioned that you are also an author. So tell us a little bit about that. And in fact, tell us a little bit more about who helps you put this show together. Tell us a little bit about your crew.
I am an author. I'm a novelist, written a couple of story collections and a graphic novel and a book of interviews. So that's actually how I got into journalism was writing fiction and then getting asked to do long form and then, you know, moving from long form print into radio. But of course, I don't do this by myself. First and foremost, Carolina Guerrero, who's my wife and also the executive director, the CEO, the boss at home and at work, who sort of helps steer the ship. Camila Segura is the senior editor. We have Silvia Viñas, who's in London, is an editor, fantastic. Just did our series on unaccompanied minors, great piece. Luis Treyes in Puerto Rico, whom we just heard from. We work with freelancers and producers from all over the world, and one of the things we try to do always is work with journalists who are in country, you know, when we're doing pieces from, whether it's from Mexico or Chile or Argentina or Honduras, we, you know, either go there ourselves and partner with local journalists or work with local journalists who are there and help them, you know, produce great radio pieces. Can't really think of another job like this that I could have, you know? It's, you know, I'm Peruvian, I was raised here in the United States, but the more I do Radio Ambulante, the less Peruvian I feel and the more Latin American I feel, you know, because
interesting.
I get, you know, in any given week I might be hearing tape from Chile and from Honduras, you know, I'll get tape from Argentina and then, you know, and then from across the United States. And what it does is made me feel very, very connected and aware of kind of the symphony of voices from the region. You know, there's so much going on and there's so many interesting stories to tell. And I feel very privileged to be in this situation to help curate.
And ultimately, you're also filling the void because a lot of those stories just aren't covered anywhere, either in the English or even in the Spanish language media very often.
Yeah, which, you know, if I can give a shout out to NPR, I mean, NPR did not have to take a chance on a Spanish language podcast, you know, and they did. It's something I'm very proud that when they chose to take this chance, they chose to take it with us. It's a really like big gamble and a statement in these times to expand the conversation even beyond the borders of language.
The last story, I had to read twice to make sure I was reading it correctly, because the last story is about ugliness, right?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, God, I love this story.
Okay. Tell us what this is about.
Well, this started for me years ago. I was in Barcelona visiting some friends, including my friend Gabriela Wiener, who's an amazing Peruvian journalist and writer. And I sort of asked her what she was working on next, and I remember, you know, she said, oh, I'm working on a book about ugliness, about being ugly. And I was like, what? And then many years later, I saw an essay she'd written. And in the piece, we sort of transformed that written essay into a radio piece. There's just no one quite like Gabriela. You know, she's a force of nature. She's brilliant. She's funny. She's a great writer, a great storyteller. And she's very self-aware. You know, she's very charismatic. And it was a shock for me to realize or to learn that she thinks of herself as ugly, and it's something that she has dealt with. I mean, I think a lot of people have dealt with it. I think a lot of women have dealt with it, but she deals with it with a great deal of honesty and verve, and attacks it head on. And she tells a story in this opening clip that we're going to hear. She tells a story of kind of the first time that she felt that way.
Me llamo Gabriela Wiener, soy peruana, soy escritora, tengo una hija y un bebé y dos novios, un chico y una chica, ¿y eso?
Súper normal.
¿Algo más? No sé qué tipo de...
Gabriela es amiga mía desde hace más de una década. Es bajita, mide 1.62 m, es morena.
Y tengo los ojos pequeños, tengo una boca dibujada como, no sé, como de los cómics.
Tiene el pelo muy largo y negro y liso, y desde que la conozco nunca se ha cambiado el peinado.
Y tengo un poco de barriga que siempre he tenido, como de si estuviera embarazada de 4 meses. Y soy un poco corpulenta, creo. Y nada, me como las uñas y hago esas cosas.
Siempre me ha parecido que Gabriela es una de las personas más seguras de sí mismas que he conocido. Siempre he sentido que cuando entra a una fiesta se puede ir a casa con cualquiera, hombres y mujeres. Por eso me sorprendió enterarme de que siempre se ha considerado una mujer fea. Fea, pero si tiene no uno, sino dos novios, Jaime y Rocío. ¿Eso no es ser exitoso? Entonces, bueno, le pregunté.
Sí, la verdad es que incluso mi novio como que es considerado guapo dentro de la norma, ¿no? Y mi chica también es bastante guapa y también pienso que soy simplemente a veces una afortunada o que es una ironía de la vida.
Bienvenidos a Radio Ambulante desde NPR.
You know, we're taping this show a few days after the massive women's march here in Washington, D.C., as well as marches around the world, in which a lot of issues were discussed that affect women everywhere. But the issues of self-identification, about appearances, about shaking off what is considered normal or what is considered beautiful, are also part of that subtext. And this particular piece, I think, really dealt with that issue in an insightful way and with a lot of humor, but with also a lot of compassion.
Yeah, I think it was one of the pieces that we've released that got the most love online and on social media because... I think a voice like Gabi's, like you don't hear someone like that all the time. You don't hear someone like Gabriela explaining what it's like to be looked down on because you're dark skinned or because you uh, you know, your body shape isn't, you know, the conventional definition of what a beautiful body shape should be, or you know, how those online comments that people throw at you, particularly at women, can cause real damage and real scarring, and then how, in spite of that, you learn to push on. You know, I mean, she's just a very strong and powerful woman, and I think that it was great for us, and something we're really proud of, that we were able to give her a space to tell that story.
Okay, before we go, can you give us a little insight, a little sneak peek, just a little quick cheat sheet of some of the things you're going to be talking about in the upcoming shows for Radio Ambulante?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, at any given moment, we have about 8 to 11 stories sort of in the mix. We have 3 pieces from Venezuela in the works. We're doing a story from Honduras later this year. We have a piece on a bid to become the first woman mayor of a small town in the Andes in Peru. And we want to just keep expanding, you know, the places that we tell stories from. We're certainly going to be doing a lot of coverage of the United States, a lot of coverage of Latinos in the age of Trump. I think that's a story that a lot of us are going to be focusing on. We want to stay up on top of what's going to happen with DACA, and that's going to be a story that's going to be very important to us and to our community. So it's going to be busy. It's going to be busy. There's a lot that we have to tell.
Before we let you go, let me ask you a philosophical question. What is it that you hope to achieve with Radio Ambulante? What kind of impact do you hope it has, and where and with whom?
That's a big question, Felix. I think in some ways, you know, considering that we started with nothing, not knowing a lot about how to make radio, we started out, you know, literally doing bake sales at the, you know, farmers market in Oakland to raise money to buy our first microphone. You know, like, considering where we started, I think that I'm really happy that we're here. You know, just to be on NPR is a huge achievement. To be reaching, you know, tens of thousands of people every week is a huge achievement, and I don't want to minimize that. But I would like to have a bigger impact with the stories on both Latin American media and U.S. media. I think conversations like this one and you know, helping get some of these stories into the mainstream discussion here in the United States is a big goal. We want to collaborate with the NPR newsroom to do bigger and more investigative stuff, and that's something that we've talked about, and I think it's something that's definitely going to happen. And the you know, in Latin America, I think we want to show people that this is a kind of journalism that can be done. You know, it's time intensive, it's demanding, it's rigorous, but it's worth it because it's a type of journalism that really takes listeners to places that they might not otherwise go, and that's such a privilege as a listener to be able to travel like that, and radio can do that.
Where can we find you on the web and on Facebook, etc.?
We are at radioambulante.org. We're at npr.org/podcasts. We're at facebook.com/radioambulante. We're at radioambulante on Twitter. And there's probably like 10 other social media things that we're on that I don't know about. but if you just Google radioambulante, that's like ambulance with a T instead of a C, then you'll find us, and we're there.
Daniel Alarcón is the co-founder and host of Radio Ambulante, NPR's newest podcast. Thank you for joining us this week and telling us about the show. And we look forward to not only just hearing more stuff, but maybe we can collaborate more in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Felix. Thanks for having us.
And while we did say that there was not going to be a lot of music in the show, we are going to end the show with a song that reflects back on the last piece you heard about self-appearance, about self-awareness, about self-identity. This is a great song by Bomba Estéreo called Soy Yo. You brought this one in because of that video that happened over the summer.
It just fits so well. You know, this little girl walking around the streets just demanding to be accepted for who she is. It fits perfectly with Gabriela's piece. Soy Yo.
My name is Felix Contreras, and this has been Out Latino.
trabajo y está relajada. Hey, no te preocupes si no te aprueban. Cuando te critiquen, tú solo di. Soy yo. Soy yo.